The House Finance Committee meeting is Monday, April 21st. It's about 2 minutes after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We have two bills up for consideration today. The members we have present at this time represent is Kelly, myself, Terrio, Co-Chair Hanley, Martin, Coring, and Davies. The first bill we have listed today is House Bill 153, dealing with aliens and assistance programs. We have folks here from the department to come forward to testify on. This is a bill that was introduced at the request of the administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Ivey. I'm a Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services. This is the reason we're here today to discuss these changes is because the federal welfare reform changed the way that legal immigrants are affected by their alien status. And there were two federal bills that affected this. The first is the Welfare Reform Act itself, and the second was the Federal Immigration Bill. What the federal law changes did is they essentially affected the eligibility of legal aliens for a variety of federal and state programs. For those programs which were all federal programs, and that is food stamps and supplemental security income, the federal law change essentially said that legal immigrants were no longer eligible for those programs. For those programs that are half state funded and half federally funded, the federal law change said that the states could grandfather in those legal immigrants who are in the country as of August 22nd. Any legal immigrant coming in after August 22nd was not eligible for 5 years. So what the governor's bill proposes to do is to provide coverage to all those legal aliens who are on Medicaid and ATAP, which is the former AFDC, as well as the Adult Public Assistance Program, to extend coverage to those individuals if they were in the country as of August 22nd. For legal aliens coming in after August 22nd, those individuals would not be eligible for any of those three programs for 5 years. We have about 2,100 legal aliens in the state now that are receiving benefits from those two programs. There's approximately 800 on adult public assistance, and then those are individuals who are the poor, elderly, and the disabled and the blind. We have about 820 who are on the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program, which is the old AFDC, so that's poor families. And then there are about 1,900 that are on Medicaid. And those folks who are on Medicaid are receiving a variety of health care services, some just through physician services, outpatient, some in hospitals, and some are actually in nursing homes. We should remember that legal aliens are eligible for these programs because they meet the eligibility criteria. There's nothing inherent in their alien status that allows them to be eligible. They're meeting the same eligibility criteria as is anyone else in the state. So in order to be on adult public assistance, you have to be eligible for federal programs which say that you are disabled or that you are elderly, poor, or you are blind. In order to meet the qualifications for ATAP, you have to meet the eligibility and income qualifications for ATAP, just like any other citizen. With regard to the one thing about the benefits, and then go on, I think, to the fiscal notes. Even though for the supplemental security income population, which is the elderly, disabled, and blind and poor, even if this bill passes, the benefit level for those individuals will drop by more than half, because those folks will not be eligible for food stamps and the federal portion of their payment any longer. That's gone. The federal government, Congress wiped that out. What we're talking about is continuing to extend for those individuals only the state portion of their payment, which is really less than half of the amount that they were getting prior to August 22nd or the passage of the federal reform law. So if the governor's bill were to pass, even for those individuals who we are continuing coverage for, the level of benefit they receive is going to be less than half than they were getting prior to the passage of federal law. Mr. Chairman, I do have some, I brought some visuals here to help us with the fiscal notes. I don't know if you want to go right into those or answer policy questions first?
Well, before we get to them, Mr. Lively, I did want to talk about an amendment that the department has passed out. It is attached to the fax that has Mr. Lindstrom's name on the front, the second page. And the department has asked us to consider this. What it deals with is on page one of the bill, line seven, where it makes reference to the federal law, 1641B. 1641B, and that's also attached to the group of papers that have the amendment, lists the areas that who are granted the ability to participate in the program. Congress also adopted 1641C that deals with aliens who are, says treatment of certain battered aliens as qualified aliens. What the department would like us to consider is passage of the amendment so that both B and C, if we remove B, then the two of them would be allowed in. And then if Congress took further action by adding another category of folks that could participate in the program, that we would not have to independently come in then and change our statute again. So we would match up with the federal law currently, and we would match up to changes that they would make. Potentially by adding folks or subtracting one of those categories sometime in the future. I know we have somebody here with your legal staff, or are you with the Department of Law?
Yes, my name is, for the record, my name is Kristen Bonington. I'm an Assistant Attorney General from the Department of Law. And yes, it was brought to our attention that that the subsequent act, as you've described, the Illegal Immigration Act, which was passed subsequently to the Welfare Reform Act, included another provision that added the another group to be considered as qualified aliens in a separate subsection C, which throws this the original proposed HB 153 a little bit out of sync with the federal law. This would bring it into sync with it. There's also a pending technical amendment that in a technical amendment bill on the federal level that's being considered. Those technical amendments would have felt within, would have fallen within 1641B. As it's written now, but for this one exception that was in the Illegal Immigration Act, that fell out of the reference in this bill.
Okay.
And as you said, this will take care of that.
Do you have, well, we'll get into that when we discuss. Well, no, let's answer the question. Do you have any idea how this would affect the fiscal note by broadening this so that this category of folks are brought into the program?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that we know how many current aliens there are on the program who have been victims of domestic violence. So to be able to predict that in the future, I don't think we know the answer to that.
Okay. At this point, are there questions from the committee on the intent of the language, or the intent of the legislation? Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, just a question, Mr. Chairman. You gave us some figures, 2,100 and 1,900 and 800 and something. How many illegal aliens do we have in the state, and what percent of this would it be?
Mr. Chairman?
Legal aliens.
I'm not, through the chair, I'm sorry, Representative Gustav. I'm not sure what the total number is in the state, although there may be some folks, I'm not sure if they're going to testify, from Catholic Community Services who have an immigration project in the state, and it's possible that they would have an answer to that. I don't know the answer.
One other question.
Representative Martin and Davis.
I guess I have to phrase the question differently than Mr. Grusendorf, does it? I guess what we're trying to get to is how many illegal aliens are on programs, not in the state. No one knows how many are in the state, but how many are on programs. You certainly put down when they sign up for programs, are they Alaskans, are they citizens, are they non-citizens? Isn't it ABC, you check them off?
Representative Martin, number one, we're talking about legal aliens, not illegal. As far as the number on the program, we did have testimony already. That was the 2,100 number. So I think what Representative Grusendorf was wondering is just, is there an idea of the population of legal aliens that reside in the state of Alaska in total?
Yeah.
Not just those that...
Okay.
The department can testify to those that participate on the program.
Chair, that's correct. And there is in your packet, I believe. There should be a couple of sheets to give further information on the demographics of who these aliens are. There's some age breakdowns, breakdowns by sex and community of residence. It should be in the packet, and if it's not, please let me know, and we'll get that information over to you.
I thought I was just clarifying,
Mr. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if a legal alien then is someone, a non-U.S. citizen that is in the state working or has a green card. Is that the most basic definition? Or?
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative Davis, I'll let Kristen comment on this too. But a legal alien generally is someone who is in the country legally and has arrived here through some kind of status, whether it's status to work, status because of a political refugee, some other kind of status, but generally it's a person who is here legally and has a green card.
Okay. Both?
Justin, do you know?
Most of those who are in the country legally. There are still a group that's residing here under color of law that are in a kind of gray zone yet. And I don't know exactly where the green card fits in with that. We haven't really examined immigration law sufficiently to know where that would intersect.
But they are a non-U.S. citizen.
They're non-U.S. citizens, yes.
Representative Hanley. And Representative Davies, did you have a question or?
No, I just want to clarify that legally illegal.
Representative Hanley.
First, I don't know if I needed to clarify. I have a sister-in-law who is a legal alien. My brother's married to a woman from Ecuador. She's been here for a number of years. She's not on welfare or any of these programs, but I should probably disclose that. And just for people to understand, I guess it's helpful. We didn't even get into the reason why Congress, or at least my understanding of why Congress did these kinds of things. And my understanding is that legal aliens will not be eligible for these types of benefits for 5 years. After 5 years, they will be eligible. And the reason for that is that to become a legal alien, you were supposed to have a sponsor, someone who certifies that they are willing to make sure you get a job, you have employment, or is willing to provide that for you, help you with your time in this country. And I guess the feeling was people were saying that but weren't doing it, and that people, if they have a sponsor, shouldn't be on a welfare program because the sponsor, that was part of the deal of becoming a legal alien. So that's the reasoning, I think, why, to some extent, the Congress has said for the first 5 years. Now, there's a question, and one of the things that this bill does, which I think is appropriate, it says as of the date of the passage, some people, right or wrong, were in this country, were receiving these benefits. And this bill will, at least from a state perspective, grandfather in those people before that bill actually passed, so that whether they should have been sponsored by their sponsor or not, they weren't. And rather than telling them the rules of the games have changed, now that this bill has passed, this bill attempts to, at least from a state perspective, grandfather people in. But it does comply with that general approach that after that date, for those 5 years that you aren't going to be eligible for the programs.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Representative Kelly.
In our packet, there's a letter to Representative Hanley from Jay Livey, and attached to it in the back, explanations of the cost savings. What are the differences between these?
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and talk about the fiscal note issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kelly, I think that I can explain those.
Jay, would you pull the microphone over to the edge of the table so that...
If the cord runs that long.
And maybe, Representative Davis, if you could put the one over there just up on the ledge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to talk loudly. What I did was we went through and tried to graphically display. The fiscal notes are complicated on this bill, and so what we did is we had to go through and display a little bit about what's happening here. So let's start with the Adult Public Assistance Program. What we see is that as of August 22nd, we said there are 800 illegal immigrants on the program. And so what we're doing is we are saying that those people are going to be with the bill, are going to be grandfathered. Those 800 will be grandfathered in. But what happens is when you get to fiscal year 98-99 and the out years, this is a set pot, a set group of people now. There's 800 people there. There's going to be some attrition from that group over the years. And because there's attrition and because we're not letting any new folks on, then the cost of the APA program for illegal immigrants will go down over the next few years, and these are the cost reductions. We just did 2 years on here. We have the rest of the years, I think, in that memo that Representative Kelly was referring to. So this is what happens if this bill were to pass. 800 people now, attrition, some of those folks will go off, so in future years the program becomes less expensive. Now, if the bill doesn't pass, what we have is a situation where our statutes currently do not exclude legal aliens from adult public assistance. So if this bill were not to pass, we would have to continue covering those individuals. We calculate that the number of legal immigrants would grow by approximately 5% a year, and so you see increased costs here and then on out as this pot of 800 continues to grow. So that's the reason for, with adult public assistance, that's why the fiscal note works the way it does. Now the second program that's affected is Alaska Temporary Assistance Program, old FDC, and remember those are poor families. Same logic applies if the bill passes. We have 820 or so legal immigrants on the program now. Excuse me, there's attrition to the program over time, and so you have this cost savings in the out years because new people aren't coming on, some of these people are coming off. Right, so there's ATAP savings if the bill passes. If the bill doesn't pass, then there's a little bit different situation. We have the same issue as far as our statutes not excluding legal immigrants. So if the bill doesn't pass, then legal immigrants are still eligible for the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program. So this 820 number is going to grow as we go out here in time. Now the complicating factor with ATAP is that because of the 5-year ban in the federal law that Representative Hanley talked about, because of that 5-year ban, as we move out here in time, this increased cost becomes all general fund. Because the feds for 5 years are not participating. We can't use federal funds to fund any portion of this. Mm-hmm. So this becomes a general fund expenditure. And actually, I misspoke. Let me back up a second. I'm sorry. We're anticipating that this number of immigrants, this 820, is not going to grow over time because of a variety of things, primarily because of welfare reform efforts. We think that the illegal immigrant will be flat across here. So what you see here as increased costs are really cost shifts. All general fund. Any questions on that one? That's a little trickier. Okay. Now Medicaid is the trickiest, and it's actually the reason I've asked John Sherwood to join me because he can explain this a lot better than I can. Our statutes
in state law work conversely for Medicaid than they do for ATAP and adult public assistance. In Medicaid, you essentially have to be written into the statute to be eligible. Our state law currently doesn't write legal immigrants into the statute. They are always eligible just because of their relationship to the federal programs. But the federal government, through the immigration law, and you guys help me out here if I get in trouble, the federal law severed that relationship. So if HB 153 passes, we continue to cover legal immigrants like we always have. Legal immigrants that are, we're not going to have any... Help me.
Well, basically, our budget currently includes this the spending for illegal immigrants right now. And for the record, I'm John Sherwood with the Division of Medical Assistance. If this bill passes, we would continue to cover the qualified aliens. There would be some caseload reduction over time with qualified aliens as people newly arriving in this country experience the period of ineligibility. But because of the way our state law is written, that occurs whether or not the bill passes or not. That just happens as a result of the change in federal law. So that's not reflected in the fiscal notes. What does happen under this program, if you choose the option not to cover legal qualified legal aliens, you must continue to provide emergency services through the Medicaid program. And in addition, certain aliens with specific health care needs would be eligible for general relief medical assistance, which is state general funds only. And that actually creates a cost shift in from a 50-50 program to a general fund program. And we have provided that information as backup information in our fiscal notes to show the effect of not passing this legislation. There is approximately 1,500 aliens would become ineligible for regular Medicaid